Nightlife. Bite-sized history.
Australia's gold rush era not only brought an influx of people from overseas in the hope of striking it lucky down under, but it also had an unusual impact on Queensland's shipbuilding industry. Yes, I know, shipbuilding. I suppose you may have thought that Queensland didn't have one. But what's the connection between shipbuilding and searching for gold? Well, Dr. Stephen Gapps joins me to explain. Stephen is an historian. He's a senior curator of voyaging and early colonial maritime history at the National Maritime Museum. Stephen, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening. Thank you.
Take us back to the late 19th century when thousands of people, of course, were flooding to Queensland in the hope of finding gold. The gold rush in Queensland was later than the rest of Australia, wasn't it? How did that impact on the shipbuilding industry?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. The gold rush was in the 1870s, and Queensland was particularly far north. That's where it occurred, in far north Queensland. The Palmer River goldfields are the most prominent one. So that's a very isolated, remote location. You wouldn't want to walk there from Brisbane, for example. So the goldfields, the closest port, I suppose you could call it that, was Wallumbale Beery, which is more commonly known now as Endeavour River, and Cooktown became, essentially became built to service the Palmer River goldfields. So that first really significant movement of colonial peoples into the far north was through the port, this very small port of Cooktown in the far north. So there were no other major, towns or ports. You go down to Cairns and then Innisfail, etc.
Yeah.
But
it's remote, as you say. There's no other way to get there.
That's right. That's right. Well, it was a very difficult journey. Yes. So ships and boats were obviously critically important to that development.
Yeah. A lot of Chinese gold seekers, of course, they arrived in Australia for the Ballarat gold, for the Victorian goldfields, often landing in South Australia and walking across. Same here, wasn't it? A lot of them landed in Darwin and walked all the way across through the Gulf country to the Palmer River.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. There's also reports of, many Chinese came across on boats to steamers that went into Brisbane and wherever and Darwin. But there's also reports that some Chinese junks sailed to North Queensland.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
where would they have sailed from?
From Canton, as it was known then, right. Hong Kong.
Right.
I think it was 1848, there was a really large Chinese junk was built to test, basically to test its sailing capabilities, and kind of to prove that the Grand Chinese Fleet, which you may know about of the 1450s, did sail such vast distances around to Africa. But that sailed from Europe from China to America and to Europe. So the sailing capabilities of junks were well known.
Yeah, okay. Tell me about Ah Gim. Ah Gim was a famous captain of a junk known as the Wong Hing, which was used not only for fishing in and around Cooktown, but it also ventured much further afield. Where did it go?
Yeah, so I think it's interesting that the when boats began to be built, and the first two Chinese junk-style boats, which are large ocean-going vessels, were built in Cooktown in the early 1870s. They were built not so much for trading and movement of peoples, but for bêche de mer or sea slug fishing. So this was an industry that obviously sea slugs, when they were dried out, were a delicacy back in China. And it was a really lucrative industry. So Captain Ah Gim was one of the first captains of one of the junks that were built and in Cooktown, and from there as a base would sail up to the coast of New Guinea, across to the Solomon Islands, and return with you know, a cargo full of sea slugs.
Oh, okay. Now, hang on. This was a Chinese junk that he built in Cooktown. It was built on Chinese nautical lines, not it wasn't built like a Western vessel.
Exactly. So there were two built in the early 1870s, two we know of.
Right.
But possibly more. Yeah, exactly. Built in the form of Chinese junks. There were obviously, with the gold rushes, the Chinese were very skilled at bringing out all sorts of, skilled people. And there were a couple of shipwrights, obviously, that came out too.
There must have been, because it's quite a skilled thing to build a ship, isn't it?
Yeah, as long as you've got a shipwright in charge, you've got lots of labourers too.
Yeah, exactly. They, Ah Gim and his crew were sort of undaunted, weren't they, by unfriendly natives and anybody else? Although they took quite a few risks on the water and came under attack in New Guinea. What happened?
Yeah, that's right. Well, the interesting thing about Ah Gim is that he became widely known amongst the non-Chinese European population in Australia as an amazing voyager into the Southeast Asian waters. But he, at one point, I'm just trying to think, there was a few instances where ships, these Chinese vessels who were, you've got a crew of perhaps 40 Chinese sailors, were going into small islands where no Europeans or anyone else had been before, conducting trade negotiations and trying to get fishing operations going. So it was quite dangerous, and sometimes they were attacked.
Yes, he was as you say, quite well known in Queensland waters. The Queenslander newspaper in 1890 described him as a portly, celestial bêche-de-mer fisher and one of the most respectable men in New Guinea waters. He was very successful, wasn't he? But he did have some difficulties with New Guinea locals. The Wong Hing came under attack several times, didn't it? Oh, it was quite dangerous. Some unfortunate men from the schooner Prosperity had been killed in New Guinea waters, hadn't they? Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've looked at the details of these stories, but I've been researching this topic for a long time and haven't looked at it closely lately. The Prosperity, I think, was one of the few instances where the Chinese crews took up a schooner, non-Chinese style ship.
They came under attack and they're all killed. 30 of them were killed, and their bêche-de-mer smoking houses were used to smoke their bodies. Terrible.
Anyway,
Ah Gim always took along guns and plenty of guard dogs on his voyages. Apparently, in fact, in 1891 there was news reaching Cooktown that Ah Gim had been killed. He'd been murdered. And a force of 70 police were sent to New Guinea to punish the natives responsible. But a bit like Mark Twain, reports of my death are greatly exaggerated. He sailed back into Cooktown with a hold full of bêche-de-mer.
Yeah, and I think that really established his fame in the region. That's for sure. Mm.
Anyway, so the Chinese junks we don't think about them probably in northern Australia. There was another type of vessel too, the sampan, which was more numerous than a junk. Tell me about the difference between a junk and a sampan.
Yeah, well, you're probably familiar with the Chinese style of junk with the tall batten sails, and it's a ship. And it's essentially, a sampan is a small. There's sailing sampans and non-sailing sampans. So sampans are like an open dinghy type craft with a. You might be familiar with the sampans that were common in Hong Kong. They have a little half cabin cuddy roof and someone stands on the back with a pole and pole them along. So the sampans are generally three, I think it stems from three planks, generally a kind of small craft, but quite a wide and flat vessel that could take a very large cargo for the size of the vessel itself. So they were very, very useful in not just well, they were used for many things, but tendering to larger vessels offshore for a start to load cargo, but also transporting produce down rivers and straight to ships. They were really useful for that. And sailing sampans could take several tons. They were a little bit larger and had a sail, just a mast, a step mast that could be popped up. And they could take, several tons. Are often used in the mining industry in and around Darwin in the 1890s. But in Queensland, the numbers of sampans that were made were huge. Very quick and easy to construct on a riverbank. And at one point, I think it's 1901, Federation celebrations, there were reports of 400 illuminated sampans as part of the parade. Mm. So they were, I think, it would be easy to say they were the most common sort of small vessel in the late 19th century around Queensland waters.
Yeah, we don't think about this, do we? We don't think about this
at all. Well, obviously, because a lot of, and the information is not huge on these vessels, primarily because after 1901, obviously the White Australia Act came in, and Chinese mostly were sent packing, those watercraft were replaced. Although there were sites of junks in that's still being used occasionally in the early 1900s and right up to the 1920s, used for, on the sugarcane, banana plantations around the north.
Mm. Yes, we don't think of sampans and junks being part of Australia's maritime history, but they were for a time in the late 19th century, very much so in Queensland at least.
Well, I was just going to say also, there was a period of their popularity amongst non-Chinese people, and a Captain Harvey brought a sampan across from Singapore to Western Australia, shipped it over, and he sailed it around and took it fishing. That didn't work, but then decided to create sampan races. And so there were in Perth, South Australia in the 1890s, and even on Lake Albert in Melbourne, Victoria, there were a category of small sailing vessel races for sampans. So it was quite a surge in interest in sailing sampans at that period too.
Yeah. Yes, all right. I mean, around the turn of the century, of course, there was a lot of anti-migrant sentiment developed in Australia. A lot of it hasn't gone away, I guess. And many Chinese immigrants returned to China. But the extent and importance of Chinese boat building activity has been largely ignored, hasn't it? We've sort of collectively forgotten about it.
Yeah, and that's what interested me when I came across this material, the fact that it was, there are descriptions of places like Innisfail and Cairns resembling Hong Kong. There were so many Chinese vessels and Chinese people, nostalgic memories of that period as being almost like some kind of exotic location. But yes, we do tend to forget these things once they're in the past. And I guess one of the issues there is that, I mean, we do remember the Chinese goldfields presence quite well and the historic fabric of Chinese buildings and temples and Chinatowns, but the kind of the maritime side of it is much more ephemeral. It would be incredibly, I think it's almost impossible to find an historic remnant of one of these vessels after 120 odd years. So it's very, and sailing vessels don't last that well once they've been in the water. So the material fabric it isn't there as well. That's probably part of the reason that we haven't looked at it.
Interesting. All right, Stephen, good to talk. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.